You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for joining us for hour number two. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And we're bringing in Matt Modica here in a minute, talking about MLB, spring training, upcoming drafts with Tout Wars weekend, just really 7 days away, 6 days away. I believe they get started on Friday. So, Matt, how are you? First of all, how was your St. Patrick's Day?
My St. Patrick's Day was good, kind of quiet, but good time. Unfortunately, last night I couldn't stay up for the whole game of the WBC. I was fighting too, but did fall asleep after the Buster Posey home run.
Well, yeah, so it's U.S. plays the Dominican for the right to face Puerto Rico. That's where we're at now, correct?
Yes, I think this is what we all wanted to see anyway. This is like the two big guys going up at it, and it's like the heavyweight fight. The winner moves on, the loser goes home. So I will definitely be watching this one tonight.
Yeah, I think I'll. I have not been able to watch too much of it between traveling and a couple other reasons, but I think this is one I'm going to settle in and watch. Obviously, the U.S. Last time they played Dominican Republic in sort of the initial round in the pool play, Andrew Miller kind of fell apart. They blew a four or five run lead. Yeah, it's. I'm always hesitant to use that term, but I guess. I guess it's apt in that situation, right, George?
I mean, listen, it's always tough to tell with WBC. Well, these guys, they're just trying to get their work in. Is he ready to pitch in competitive games right now? Well, I guess if you want to compare it to the World Series, fine. I don't know if they're getting quite that amount of adrenaline up. But anyway, you look at it, he didn't pitch well. That was a 5-0 lead. They should have won that game.
Well, I'm kind of curious to why Cleveland is letting Andrew Miller pitch in the WBC. He pitched, you know, how many innings in the postseason? The World Series went to Game 7. He's a vital part of that bullpen. So I was a little...
I don't think they can stop him unless there's a legitimate medical reason.
No, yeah, you are right, but I mean, you could have a conversation or something to pretty much... I mean, maybe he was just dead set on doing it.
No team wants their player. Yeah. Isn't Washington bitching now because Daniel Murphy's not even playing? He's had 11 at-bats in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was pretty strange. I saw something about that yesterday. Like, what does Daniel Murphy got to do to get an at-bat?
He's behind Ian Kinsler. I get it. I mean, we can argue that you'd rather that Murphy's a better hitter, but Kinsler's a better fielder.
Yeah, Murphy's fielding leaves a lot to be questioned.
A lot to be desired.
Yeah, so anyway, that's tonight. That's the
what
big
time
news
is the game tonight,
WBC.
You know?
I think it's 9 tonight.
Oh, a little earlier.
Yeah, because I guess Saturday they could start it at 6 in the West Coast.
Maybe I can catch that then before getting some Z's, so I might wake up for this show tomorrow.
Yeah. It's always lurking. I woke up at like 4 today just because I was sort of like, you got one of those anxious things. I woke up at like 4:15, and I was like, well, I could maybe catch
You're
a little bit
You're anxious for
more
a show
sleep,
you've
but...
done hundreds of times before.
That's how I am. I wish I was a different way, but that's just how I am. And once I was awake, I took one look at my phone to see what time it was. Then the next thing I know, I'm reading an article, and then it's off to the races from there. So, it's unfortunately, that's how my brain works, and I couldn't shut it off. So, in any event, some news and notes from this week and from a couple of days ago. Max Scherzer had been using a modified three-finger grip to alleviate the pressure on his knuckle at a dreaded finger injury, which we've been trying to figure out if it's going to be any kind of long-term impact. It seems like he feels a lot better these days, but he's still not speculating about opening day. So thoughts about Scherzer? Do you think this is just he maybe misses a start or two as they bring him along slowly? And does it have any impact to how you feel about Scherzer currently? George, you first.
Oh, Scherzer. I mean, it's raising red flags. I mean, I'm not dropping him. I'm not taking him in the first round anymore. So I've taken him out of that. Maybe I might have taken him in the 10 to 12 range. I have Kershaw going in more of the top half. So Scherzer would have been the back half of that. Now I put him around 15, middle of the second round, somewhere around there. But I'm paying more attention now. You know, he's not still not throwing there. And we heard he changed his grip earlier on. That concerns me as well. It means that this is an injury from last year. It's not something that happened last month. It's from last year that still isn't healed. So I'd be lying if I said I'm not concerned here, but I'm not overthinking it either. I think Matt and we all talked about this on Thursday. At the end of the year, this is probably something we'll forget about. His numbers will be what his numbers always are. But right now, you know, I think I'd rather go to Corey Kluber, Madison Bumgarner, Noah Syndergaard over Scherzer.
I totally understand people being concerned, but I look back at last year at this time, and Madison Bumgarner had like a foot issue during spring training, and he was getting hit pretty hard. And as soon as the season started, that all went away, and he was the Madden Bumgarner we all know and love. So, I mean, if you want to move Bumgarner ahead of Scherzer, I'm fine with it. I think Scherzer threw some innings in a minor league game on Wednesday, if I'm correct. And he said that he's beyond having to use that three-finger grip. So he still has some time to get some innings in. He won't start opening day, which I'm fine with, but maybe he makes the start in the fifth game of the season. If he misses even one start, I'm not really concerned. So, I mean, he's not really moving down my board. I understand if you want to put Madison Bumgarner slightly ahead of him.
Yeah, so right now, NFBC average draft position, he is sort of, George kind of hit the nail on the head. He has slid out of that, well, obviously depending on the size of your league, but he is now averaging just about the 13th pick. Still the second pitcher on average behind Kershaw and in front of Bumgarner. As you said, Matt, you can shift these things around, but ultimately he's probably slid slightly from where we had him just a few weeks ago. Obviously, yeah, it's kind of an eyebrow-raising situation, and you don't want to get too crazy over news like that, but when it's the the player is that high of a price, you simply have to pay attention. Every pick as you in that first round range is so valuable. Like, yeah, sliding down three slots is a big deal, isn't it, George?
I don't know what's a big deal. It could be enough where we just move on. You know, maybe you think of Scherzer and somebody else. Maybe you go to somebody else if it worries you. I'm the best player available in the first couple of rounds. I also am a conservative drafter in the first couple of rounds. And it could be enough for me to move on from Scherzer. That being said, I agree with Matt. This is probably something where we're not going to be worried about mid-April on. You know, you're fine. He's fine. Everything works out well. You know, the adrenaline's not totally flowing right now. The Bumgarner injury, I think, last year is a pretty good comparison. Yeah, if I was in spring training, when you don't really care. You're just getting your work in. As soon as the adrenaline really goes, the blood starts flowing, the regular season, the games count, all of a sudden that injury's not all that important anymore. That being said, if I'm drafting in a mixed league, I'm probably going to stay away. You know, I'll take that Bumgarner ahead of him. I'll take Syndergaard ahead of him. So I think that's the way I would attack it right now. But I know in my home league, it's a keeper league, Scherzer's available. I have the 12th pick. There are some keepers like Mookie Betts and someone like that's a keeper. If Scherzer's staring at me at 12, which would be the equivalent of probably 18, 19 overall, I'm probably taking him.
Yeah, Scherzer's just too tough to pass up. And I'm looking at the NFBC average draft position since March 1st. They had that feature, and that's the one you really got to be concentrated on. And Scherzer's sitting there at 14. Now you got Miguel Cabrera, who just left the WBC because of a back issue, and he's going 13th overall. So, I mean, I don't think either issue is something to be really concerned about. There's, like I said, there's still a couple of weeks left, or maybe not, but both these guys, once the bell rings, they'll be there. They'll put up the numbers, in my opinion. And I wouldn't get too scared off of these players.
Okay. Other injury news, which is something that came up really in the last week, was Ian Desmond. Obviously got hit on the hand, but went to surgery. His second metacarpal, he was hit by a pitch on his left hand. So second metacarpal, he had surgery. They deemed that the surgery went well. According to Dr. Sheridan, everything that they saw on film was realized when they went in, said manager Bud Black. So this is seeming like a 4 to 6 weeks timetable. It could have been, I suppose, a lot worse. Broken bone in the hand, and these hand injuries are stuff that you hate to see because you never know how long they'll linger. But it seems, George, like they got it fixed. We know what the timetable is, and he could be back by the end of April.
This seems to be a really optimistic timetable for me. 4 to 6 weeks, you had a metal plate inserted in your hand. 4 to 6 weeks, really? You're coming back and you're going to be the same player you always were? Not buying it. Not buying it at all. I hate when players, batters, get hand injuries, wrist injuries, thumb injuries. That's always a problem. You don't know when the strength in that hand is going to come back and really drive the ball again. So although it's nice, and some people may think, 4 weeks, we'll be back in mid-April. You know, no problem. I can miss a couple of weeks. Long season. Yeah, that may be true, but he may not be the same player to the All-Star break. Hell, he may not be the same player to 2018. If the value's there, I'll still draft him, but he was going around about round four. For me, it's double digits now before I would even think about him.
I agree with George. I think he kind of nailed it on the head. I mean, this is a hand issue for a batter. I really want no part of him right now. We're really going to see him till the end of May, more like June. He's going to have to get some at-bats, too, in the minor leagues. So, I mean, Ian Desmond was a guy that I was off of. I was back on once he signed with Colorado. I don't think the power was really going to play that great in Colorado. I think he's more of it would be more for his batting average. It would help out because of that vast outfield. But for me right now, Ian Desmond is sliding down major in my draft boards, and like George said, it would have to be post double-digit rounds.
Yeah, so his teammate Mark Reynolds suffered a similar injury to the fifth metacarpal in his hand last year. He was hurt on September 18th and not cleared to swing a bat until mid-December. That's 2 months. So that's before he got clearance to even swing a bat. They haven't mentioned they hadn't mentioned a timetable until Black came out and said 4 to 6 weeks, and I'll bet there's people in the Rockies organization that wish Bud Black hadn't said anything like that, because now you're putting a stamp on it when you don't have no idea exactly how this is going to react. So if you're taking Ian Desmond, I think we'd all agree you are taking on a lot of risk there if you're the 4 to 6 weeks believer. Just keep in mind that a player on his team who's actually came back to the Rockies under a minor league contract and is going to fill in for Desmond, that guy took 2 months to even get cleared to swing a bat with a similar injury.
I think maybe a little bit of apples and oranges there. Off season, they're going to take their time there. They won't rush him back as much. And
probably true.
When we say similar injury, I mean it's not the exact same injury. Everybody heals differently. But that being said, if he's back by April 15th, I am floored. Absolutely floored. I think your best case scenario is probably close to Memorial Day.
Yeah, I just think it's supremely optimistic on Bud Black's part. And like you said, I totally agree. He really shouldn't have came out and said anything like that.
Yeah, so, Diamondbacks left fielder Yasmani Tomas has not played since March 6th, and an MRI on Wednesday showed a left oblique strain. George, I feel like you and I have talked about oblique injuries since we got started this year talking baseball, and yet another player who could be sidelined for... said he still thinks there's enough time. D-backs manager Torey Lovullo said on Thursday he thinks there's enough time for Tomas to be ready in time for opening day. With these oblique injuries, I don't know that we ever believe the timetables, do we?
Oblique's another. I mean, when you swing a bat, it's a violent action, and you're torquing your oblique constantly over and over again. So if you come back too soon, you're going to injure it again. They say they're going to reevaluate him in 4 to 6 days, and that was on the 16th. So let's say it's 5 days in the middle. It puts him at the 21st, which is, Tuesday? You've got pretty much a little less than 2 weeks to get ready for opening day. I guess it could happen here. But once again, are we really worried about this? Why is opening day so important? It's a 162-game season. I'm not that concerned about that. If I'm a Tomas owner, or I'm going to be a Tomas owner, I just want him to be healthy. I don't want him to come back too soon. That's what I'm worried about. That he's never not healthy all season, comes back too soon, and now it's, instead of 4 to 6 days, it's 4 to 6 weeks. That's my concern there. Don't bring him back too early.
Yeah, I think with the oblique, you pretty much need a solid month to get healthy with that. And you're drafting Yasmani Tomas for his power, and the oblique is really going to hurt that. So if I'm somebody that's going to draft Yasmani Tomas, I'm going to take the notion that he's going to miss some time. And I want him to be on the DL, get healthy, and come back at full strength.
Yeah, NFBC currently 35th ranked outfielder, 151st overall pick. So a guy with some value, and he's getting drafted around Byron Buxton, Jackie Bradley Jr., Yasmani Tomas, Carlos Gomez, Adam Duvall, Keon Broxton. That's kind of the range of players that he was going for. So, again, like you said with the Desmond injury, maybe it's a guy that you just kind of opt for a different outfielder. You know, George, you've mentioned many times you're in leagues where there are so many outfielders being drafted. Like, maybe you just go with another option because you're not exactly sure what's going to happen here.
Well, in most leagues, you're starting five outfielders. You can do the math there. 12-team league, 15-team league, 60, 75 outfielders. Plus, you're going to have some outfielders in your utility. You're going to have some outfielders on your bench. There's just not going to be many left over, which is why generally in my draft, I lean towards outfielders, a tiebreaker thing. If I need there's an outfielder and a second baseman that I have ranked equally, I'm probably going towards the outfielder. Got to start more of them.
I think one of the interesting things, as you mentioned, his draft position, Yasmani Tomas, the guy next to him, Kenyon Broxton, has shot up about 40-plus points over the last month. He was going in like the 190s, and now he's like 153 overall. So everybody's believing in Kenyon Broxton.
Yeah, good stuff. So we'll continue to talk about news and notes from around the fantasy baseball landscape, draft strategies, and all that good stuff. Mike, George, and Matt back after this. Welcome back. Mike, George, and Matt here until 10 o'clock, going over the news and notes, helping you with your fantasy baseball drafts. And as we continue to bomb towards opening day, obviously the World Baseball Classic is still ongoing. As we mentioned earlier, U.S. has to beat the Dominican in order to advance. So there will be a lot of pressure on that game tonight.
Who's pitching tonight? Anybody know? Who's pitching?
A great question. It's a great question.
I think it's Tanner Houck.
Is it really?
I think it is. I mean, Smiley went the first one. Stroman last night. I think that's almost definitely Tanner Houck.
It's Danny Duffy versus Ervin Santana.
Wow. Whoa.
Pitching-wise, that's an advantage to U.S.
Yeah, but all these guys, like Edison Volquez, seems like they all step up for this like game, like these big games. I mean, the players from Puerto Rico, from the Dominican Republic, and even like Venezuela, the amount of pride that they have for these games is, I mean, it's quite amazing, the enthusiasm and all that. So, I mean, this is a big test for Team USA. I think they really need to step it up. They really need to win this game. But we shall see. It's not going to be easy.
They really need to win the game?
Matt.
Well, they don't. They're done.
They don't. But it's just it's something for, like, if you really want, like, the World Baseball Classic to, like, really mean something. Because you see how – my point is how the other countries take it so – it's so significant for them. I think we need to start stepping it up as well.
It'll never mean that much here.
That's true. Like I said, I wasn't even into it when it first started, but the games have just been so much fun.
Same way. So I don't want to say I couldn't have cared less, but the games have been good games. Maybe also we're dying for baseball here. You know, living here in New York, we're cold, snow's on the ground, we want to see the warm weather and all that. But the games have been very good. That being said, you see the players don't. I mean, we don't have Kershaw, Bumgarner, Kluber, Sale. None of these guys want to pitch in it. You know, and I get their teams would have a heart attack if these guys pitched in it as well. So I get that. But, no Trout, no Harper. You know, it'd be nice to see the best players actually play in this thing. So that would help as well. And I think it'll always be I think the international teams will always want it more than Team USA will.
Matt, speaking of Ervin Santana, haven't you said that you had – I thought it was you that said that you kind of like Santana, knowing that he's not going to pick up many wins, but you kind of liked his production?
Oh, yes. I like Santana as a late option arm. He's a guy pretty much will give you 180 innings for the most part, an under 4 ERA. And when you're late in drafts, I know everybody wants to take, say, Lucas Giolito or Tyler Glasnow, who I think will both have excellent futures. But for, like, 2017, I want a guy like Francisco Liriano, like an Ervin Santana, guys that are proven, guys that can give you the innings and – you know, help your team out over the long run of the season. I think a lot of people pass on those. It's not that I love Santana. I like him for when you're for your back end of your rotation. Those guys you need to step in because, as we all know, pitchers are going to go down. And when you can insert somebody like that, that's a big boost.
Yeah, I had Ervin Santana on my keeper league last year. Obviously not somebody that I'm going to keep. I only keep five. But I had him last year, and he did help me with certain categories. I was not picking up many wins, but he was at least a stable option to put out there for my lineup, and it was a lineup that was falling apart. Ultimately, I didn't gain much out of it, but I did have a stable arm in the lineup. Ironically, I had Stroman in there as well. So we will see how the World Baseball Classic plays out tonight. But, you know, George, I wanted to go back to you regarding the article that you were talking about that you wrote for the Exclusive Edge package. And keep in mind, you can get the Exclusive Edge package by going to rotoexperts.com, enter code free code, enter promo code free radio for a discount. So, George, what were, in the article that you wrote, what were some of those tips that you have and how to win your league? Like, what are some of those key factors? Clearly, maybe the more expert players might be aware of some of this stuff, but I think it's important for people that are maybe not as accustomed to baseball drafts and fantasy baseball. What were some of those tips that you give people to make sure that they get an edge over their opponents?
Well, we've been talking about them all show. When you talk about baseball, like I said, I'm a best player available guy. I'm not going to take too many chances early on in my draft. Don't see the reason to. Baseball is a game of numbers. You can pretty much look on the back. I like to say the back of a baseball card shows my age. But, of course, in this day and age, you can look online, see what a player does year after year after year. And you'll have an idea of what numbers they're going to put up. I'm a big believer in, if you're playing in a rotisserie league, especially a league that's been around for multiple years, but even a league that hasn't been, you can always look up online and find out about the average amount of home runs you're going to need to win your league. Let's say offhand it's 300. You know, the last 3 years, it's taken 300 home runs to win that category, to get 12 points in that category. Well, then you know when you draft Miguel Cabrera, what do you have him marked in for? 32 home runs? Well, now you need 268 home runs to win that category, and you mark it down like that. And you'll have an idea as your draft goes on, do I need more power? Do I need more speed? You know, average. Well, where am I lacking? Strikeouts. You know, you'll have an idea there. You have to trust your assessment, your values of what you think every player will do. And that's how I go about things. There are many, many things we could talk about here. But I think that's always an important thing for me. Another thing is when you are on your rankings list, not only should you have a rankings list, you know, 1, 2, whatever, 500, 300, and break it down by positions, but tier it. So you understand when there's a drop-off at a certain position. Just because there's, you know, five outfielders left and only one second baseman, but know where the tier is. Of where that player, whether it's going to be a significant drop off, that'll let you know once again, do I need to draft this position now? Or at least you'll be aware that after this, I might want to wait on a third baseman for four or five rounds because there's just nobody left.
Matt, thoughts?
One second.
Another thing you could do here is, like I said, there's many, many different things. I mentioned earlier, years ago, it was all about hitting. I wanted my hitters here. Now I've changed. Where I want pitching early. Pitching has changed over the past, what, I'd say about the past decade or so. Is that because steroids are no longer in the game or it's slowed down? Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe it's just the pitching age of Major League Baseball. So no, I want those hard throwers. I'm also a believer in this, that I think Ervin Santana is a perfect example of this that we were just talking about. He's a placeholder for me. You know, a guy who won't hurt you, won't really help you. But I want to stay away from guys who maybe one step lower than Santana, guys that, okay, might help me, but a good chance they're going to hurt me, especially my my ratios, whip and ERA. I'm not afraid of loading up on setup men. Setup men that I might have a chance to close at some point, but also guys who are going to get some strikeouts and protect my ratios. Yeah, I'm not going to get the counting stats. You know, unless I get an Andrew Miller type, and those guys are going to go in sort of a different category, Betances as well. You know, the guys are going to protect my my ratios rather than that fifth starter for a Major League Baseball team that, yes, will get me some wins, might get me some more strikeouts, but we're also going to have those games where they give up six runs in two innings.
I think right now in the what happened last year with the power and how we've seen the last couple of seasons with the average starting pitcher ERA on the rise, and it's been on the rise significantly, I think you have to have that foundation anchor. I think you have a major advantage. That's why I'm not opposed to taking Kershaw. If I have to, you know, one or two, I can get my hitters. But at least within the first five rounds of, say, a 15-team league, I want two pitchers. In a 12-team, maybe I go six. I go to the sixth round, because what it allows you to do, and one of the key parts of doing this, is you can take, because it gets very sketchy awful fast, it allows you to take those risks. And I mean, there's a lot of pitches that I like, but I could find a problem with pretty much all of them as we go deeper into it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt as we get later into drafts. You're really trying to, I think the best way to phrase it is just cut down on the number of flaws that you see. George, I think you're right to use Ervin Santana in that. We kind of know what we get, right? It's a known commodity sort of situation where you can count on certain things. You know, barring a freak injury, we can count on certain things that we're going to get from him. We also know what we're not going to get. And as you get deeper, Matt, you're saying you can pick apart all of these pitchers, obviously, as you get really deep, and any players for that matter. But ultimately, you're just trying to get as much of a known commodity as you can get when you're later in drafts. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's fair to say. And I think there's guys that, you know, like in fantasy, we all know it in football, baseball. We love a guy one day, and then the next day we're like, oh, we move on. Like a Francisco Liriano, who had a horrible season with the Pirates, moved to Toronto, was excellent down the stretch. But the other factor with Liriano is he's now paired up again with Russell Martin. And him and Russell Martin together has been a really good combo for him. I mean, his ERA, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but his ERA is pretty damn good when Russell Martin is behind the plate.
Good stuff. So we'll hit a break right here and continue to talk about some news and notes from around MLB. Is this Miguel Cabrera injury anything to be worried about? And some other strategy articles that we have available on the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge package that I want to talk about. So Mike, George, and Matt back after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. You can go to rotoexperts.com, get your exclusive Edge package. Here it is. The rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package for 2017 is here. Stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts, including our very own George Kurtz. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator. Get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount on the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package. So, one of the articles I was reading earlier this week, and something I wanted to talk about with you guys, is Digging Deep for Fantasy Baseball Values, written by Mike Florio, one of our staff writers, and a guy who's going to be on a little later today after our show with be on with Frank Stample and Joe Galina. They're doing a weekend fantasy update. So he talked a little bit about, you know, here's the reality of the types of shows that we do, right, and the type of content that we do. It becomes second hat to talk about Mike Trout and Max Scherzer and the top players in the draft. We all know how good they are and the type of a value that they bring. But where we really come into play and where we can really help people, and this works in football the same way, is we don't really need to tell you how good Tom Brady is. Everybody knows that. We need to tell you what you can get when you're a little bit later in your drafts or from week to week, what players you should be starting because of the upcoming matchups that they may have, right? So in that sense, we try to parse the middle and the end of the drafts to try to extract as much value out of these picks as possible. Right, George?
Of course. I mean, if you go look at baseball like you do with football, we don't really do that as much generally, but we certainly do look at it. Your teams playing Colorado, well, you start your Colorado players. You know, you're starting anybody going to Colorado. It's generally always a must. First thing I look at. And the reverse is also true. What? Starting pitchers pitching in Colorado? Oh, you might sit that week. You know, other than the Clayton Kershaws, I don't need my ERA and WHIP to be blown up that week because he gave up 8 runs in 3 innings in Colorado. No, thank you. There are always ways to look at things. It's not the exact equivalent of football. Baseball is a long season. A guy can go 1-for-4, bad day, but hit a home run. Yes, you know, so we don't want to get too silly there.
Well, I think with the draft prep and to try to find value, I think you need to break down the positions. Like, third base, in my opinion, and I think everybody agrees, is extremely deep. while first base dries up very quickly. So you have to, you could say to yourself, you know what? I could wait on third. I don't have to reach on third base, but I kind of need to get that first baseman. Otherwise, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be hurting at that position, and I might have a corner guy as my first baseman later on in the draft. So, and even like the middle infield, in my opinion, is supremely deep, which is why, as George mentioned before about outfielders, I think people don't treat outfielders as being scarce, because it really is a scarce position. Yes, there are guys we do like later on, but those guys aren't as certain as the guys in the first few rounds that are the proven guys, like the Nelson Cruzes that hit the 40 home runs every year, give you a decent batting average. So I think when you're looking for value, the first thing you need to do is to tier your players and see where the top guys are, see where there's depth at the position. And that's one of the things I think is crucial in draft prep.
Yeah, but speaking of first base, quick pivot on the Miguel Cabrera thing. Are you guys concerned about the fact that he had to leave the World Baseball Classic, or do you think it's just the Tigers and him having a conversation, being like, listen, you're like 2-for-14, you're 34 years old, we have a big investment here, we're trying to get stuff done during the regular season, can you just like call it a day on the Classic and just be ready for opening day? You think it's that kind of conversation, or it's something that you're concerned about?
I mean, Cabrera came out of the game, so I don't think Brad Austin's making any phone calls to tell him to come out here. So, no, I think it concern, sure. Level of concern is more where we're going with this here. I'm not going to miss it. If I'm drafting tonight, I'm taking Miguel Cabrera first round. I think he'll be okay by the time the regular season starts. He has been banged up somewhat over the past couple of years, but still played 158 games last year, 159 in 14, did miss 43 games in 15. So, I'm not overly concerned. You look at his history, he plays. The man plays. And other than 2015, where he missed the 43 games, I forget what the injury was there.
On top of my head, I forget too.
Yeah, so other than that, he's averaging almost 159 games a season. So I'm not all that concerned, though.
Yeah, me neither. I'm really not concerned. I saw earlier in the week when they were down a run, and he came up to the plate in the ninth inning, and it was like an effortless home run that he hit to lead off the ninth. But another thing, too, Cabrera supposedly last September had an ankle issue that he was dealing with. And if you go on, say, Fangraphs and you look at his September stats, he was in beast mode. So he's a guy that I'm really not concerned of. He'll have little aches and pains. Like you said, he's 34. But he's consistently produced, except for that one season where he missed the 43 games. He plays at least 150 every year. And kind of like an Albert Pujols, where they always make it back and they always wind up playing.
Yeah, true. He always finds a way to get out there. So, I think George is right. It's the level of concern, and I would not hesitate to draft him in that first round either. And it's not even a point where I'm like, well, there's a pushing back a couple of picks. I don't think I'm even there with that at this point. Concern, tightness in his back, but I think it's something that, you know, a lot of guys work through aches and pains during spring training typically as they get into playing mode. So we'll see how we'll obviously keep our eyes on that and update you accordingly on this network and anywhere else that we can. So getting back to the article I wanted to talk about, it's about digging deep for fantasy baseball values. Obviously, Matt, did you conclude that 50-round draft? I know it was going slow draft was the latter half of it. I don't know if you worked through all of that and if the 50 picks have been accomplished by everybody.
Oh, yes. We finished that one. We finished that a while ago. I'll be doing a 50 draft tomorrow night express, so it's 50 picks in like 4 hours.
Wow.
How many teams?
Quite a pace. How many teams?
Yeah. It's a 15-team league.
50 picks. Wow. That's 750 picks.
Yeah. Well, it's my last draft prep.
Minutes?
Maybe it's a little over 4 hours. Maybe I'm being a little optimistic.
That's 3 picks a minute. It's more than 3 picks a minute. Good luck there.
But it is a bit of a mind test, but I am just so excited. It's, you know, I'm now counting down the hours and the minutes. It's like Christmas in March. You know, Tout Weekend, NFBC Weekend. So there's going to be a lot of good people coming into town. A lot of people I get to see once or twice a year. And some great competition going down next weekend.
What draft specifically are you involved in, Matt?
I will be doing an auction on Friday afternoon. Saturday at 1 p.m., I'll be doing the main event draft. And then Sunday, me and Chris Vaccaro will be doing an auction. We'll be doing the main event together as partners at 10, and then at 1, we'll be doing an auction together. So it's
very nice. So you're going to go right from our show right into a draft?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going to head on over and get on ready.
Very nice. Okay. Well, we'll talk about one of these players for one of the deep leagues, and it's somebody that you had in your in that auction draft that we talked about, where it was 23 rounds, auction 27 rounds in the slow draft. But Robert Gsellman, who has currently has an ADP of 314, 44 and two-thirds innings, 8 games, 7 starts. He pitched a 2.42 ERA with a 2.63 FIP, 1.28 WHIP, while averaging almost 8.5 Ks per 9. So, your thoughts first, Matt, on Gsellman. I know you've talked about him a little bit in the past, but just kind of refresh those people that maybe hadn't heard your thoughts about him this season.
Well, I'm very high on him, but he's also a pick that you're taking later on. I think he's going to pan out. I love that the Mets have this depth. He's going to step in as the fifth starter. But also, too, I have to be realistic. I'm looking at a sample size from last season, which was very good. I know he gained some velocity. The slider was excellent for him. But when I have to now project it, say, over 150 innings, 160 innings, there's still some risk with Robert Gsellman. He's looked very good in the spring. I'm very optimistic, but I think sometimes people are like, you know what, I can just wait. Later on in the draft, I'll get like Robert Gsellman, and he's going to be fantastic. I think he's going to be really good, but there's a level of risk there, too. He hasn't done it on the MLB stage over the course of a full season yet, so people need to understand, you know, he's a late-round pick for a reason.
George, you echo those sentiments?
Yeah, pretty much. I'll also point out is the Mets are loaded at that fifth spot there. Assuming Syndergaard, DeGrom, Harvey, Mats are your 1-4. It's really Gsellman, Lugo, Wheeler. We're already all the buzz about Wheeler. He's on the ball 97 miles an hour. Lugo's pitched well in the WBC. Not so much yesterday. But still, he's pitched pretty well. So they're all in line here. Who's going to win this job and stay in it? You have a feeling they want Wheeler to eventually get the fifth starter here. When is eventually? You know, I'm a believer they should probably set him to extended spring training, make sure he get his innings up there. I mean, Matt also hit it. What's the innings limit for all these guys? None of these guys are going to go 200 innings. So it might also be benefit to maybe have Gsellman start until Memorial Day. Then you bring Wheeler on. You sort of control their innings for both pitchers then. You could do that
I
as well.
I think that's absolute. That's a great point, George. I think that's the way to play it. I know Wheeler's outing this week was encouraging, but I think you're right. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to illuminate the fact that it's a great point. I think that's the way they should play it.
But also with starting pitchers, you have to figure there's going to be an injury here. Can Harvey even last? We don't know. Mats never lasts. So they'll need these guys anyway. They might end up needing Wheeler and Gsellman. They might need Wheeler, Gsellman, and Lugo. Matt said it. They have great depth, which is really shows what this organization can do with pitching. You think they had Michael Fulmer, too. They traded him for Cespedes. Mets do very well bringing up young pitching.
Yeah, and just to... I mean, I'm like the biggest Matt Harvey fan there is, but I haven't really touched him in any of my drafts. I'm hoping he comes back. I'm hoping he's the former Dark Knight. But it's concerning. I don't know what to expect. I don't know how his endurance is going to go throughout the season. Is the velo really going to come all the way back? I mean, that's possible. I'm encouraged that he's actually been pitching on the mound since early March. I think that's a great step forward. But we really don't know with this injury. This is like Tommy John. We know that the velocity does come back. Sometimes it's even a little harder you get to throw. But with his specific injury, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how the endurance is going to hold up, and I'm really curious, and I keep tracking it. Is the velocity going to come all the way back? And if not, is Matt Harvey going to be able to make those adjustments to become a different type of pitcher?
Yeah, and to your point about Zach Wheeler, pitching coach Dan Worthen said last month that Wheeler could be limited to 125 innings. Now, a club source is describing that situation as, quote, fluid, but to George's point, they say they have Gsellman. They may need all these guys, and I wouldn't be shocked if they, even slightly surprised if they need all of them, because the the test cases for coming back from Matt Harvey's injury is basically zero. This is really no other situations that we have like this with a big power pitcher having this kind of surgery. And Wheeler, obviously encouraging with the velocity, but 125 innings, that goes right into George's plan. Like, let's just get Kieselman in here to start the year, capitalize on his success at the end of last year, and then hand it over to Wheeler when the timing is right. Maybe Kieselman is a bullpen arm, you know, maybe for the long term, but ultimately having this embarrassment of riches in pitching, even with some question marks, is a really important thing, and I think that's why you can extract some value out of Kieselman, especially if he gets a chance to start the season. So we will talk a little bit more about some late-round values after the break. Mike, Matt, and George back after this. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Network. Talking about late round values, Mike Florio's article in the exclusive Edge package on Roto Experts. A good way to just kind of find out about if you're getting late in your drafts, maybe take these guys a little bit earlier than their ADP suggests and get a little bit of value out of them. We just talked about Robert Kieselman, and now talking about Corey Dickerson at 328. He was not just bad in the first half last year, he was flat out awful. So bad that those who drafted him likely still have a bad taste in their mouth. It was also so bad that you may overlook his second half, where he was able to right the ship. He finished the year with 24 homers and 70 RBIs, so maybe he's never going to live up to these high expectations, but it could be 25 home run power there. George, your thoughts on Corey Dickerson?
Well, you said it. It's the power you want there. There's nothing else I'm really looking for here. Tampa Bay, not one of the best ballparks to hit home runs in, but I think 25 home runs is a legitimate target there for Dickerson. I haven't penciled in for a little less than that, but not much. But my thing is, what else is he going to give you here? He's not going to probably not going to drive in a ton of runs here. They don't have the greatest offense. Certainly not going to help you with average. I'm just hoping he doesn't kill me in average by trying to hit home runs on every swing here, and he bats 220. He batted 245 last year, but he has batted over 300 a couple of times, but that was in Colorado. Tampa's a different animal here. Like I said, Mike, I have no problem drafting him late, but it's just for power here, nothing else.
I'm going to echo George's sentiments for the most part. I do think his batting average could be better. It's kind of curious to see what the Rays do. They have been batting him leadoff in spring training. And the one thing about Tropicana Field, it is better for left-handed power, so that gives him a little bump there. But like I said, he's a guy that's later on that I'm going to be looking at, that I'll take a shot on. But you know, I don't think he'll ever be the player we saw in Colorado.
Yeah, next guy he mentioned that again, trying to extract some late round value is Justin Bauer, an ADP of 329. His 38 homers over the last two seasons. That number is even more impressive when you realize that he only played in 219 games in these spans. A legit power hitter that can hit in the 260s. He's not going to kill your counting stats, as he projects to hit sixth in the Marlins lineup. So we're looking at 25 homers, 260, and 60 runs in RBIs. George, your thoughts on Justin Bauer?
Same thing, late pick, first bell, a corner infielder, maybe utility guy there. The power is legit. Unfortunately, that ballpark is the Grand Canyon of ballparks there. So, I mean, I like him. I'm not going to some people are going to freak out that, oh, we heard that Realmuto's going to play first base. Listen, a day off every now and then for Bauer wouldn't be a bad thing. He's not going to face most left-handers anyway. And that's probably the days you're looking at Realmuto play first base, is on those days where Bauer wouldn't be in the lineup either way. It's almost the same thing here we're looking at with Dickerson. I just want the power without the average killing me. I know he's not going to help me in much other categories, so I'm not looking for that. It's a late-round pick, corner fielder, utility type, and I'm praying maybe low 20s, 25 home runs, assuming he can get a full season.
I mean, I like him too. I mean, he's going so late, he's pretty much free. So, I mean, he's a guy that, as George said, he's going to hit the home runs, even in that big ballpark. I mean, I don't think there's really a stadium that could hold him because he does hit some really nice shots. But to me, the value with Bauer is he's going, say, 80 picks later than, say, a Tommy Joseph, who I like, and it seems like everybody seems to like this preseason. Even a Greg Bird, who's having a fantastic spring. And out of the three, I like Greg Bird the most. But everybody's loving Tommy Joseph, who, I mean, I'm excited to see what he can do in 2017. But is he an 80-pick difference than Justin Bauer? I don't think so.
you brought up a name that I'd like to explore here as well. George, you and I have obviously talked about him a lot as Yankees fans, but what do you think about Bird's spring training thus far? It puts it probably quells any fears that we might have had about him returning from injury, no?
I think he's in the perfect spot. The Yankees obviously want him to succeed. He's their future. That short porch is just made for him. And for Yankee fans, I think, as you said, the fears have been quelled. I mean, he's got to do it once the bell rings when the Major League season starts. But I'm optimistic on Greg Bird. And like I said, out of those three that I mentioned, he would be the guy I would want most.
Yeah, I think
George, you're feeling much better about Greg. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
It's funny. On old school fantasy, Scott and Corey like to go at each other. You know, Corey's the Yankee fan, Scott's the Met fan, and Scott likes to say the Yankees are going to be a terrible team this year. They won't be a good team, but they're going to be interesting to watch, and Bird is one of those reasons why. Bird, Aaron Judge, these guys should be, the young players, and we want to see what they can do. Bird looks fantastic in spring training. That Arizona Fall League where he was a disaster at the end of last year, forget about it. Doesn't mean anything. His swing is, tailor-made for Yankee Stadium, and he's got power the other way, too. It's a natural hitter. Sweet swing here. I'm still not taking him as a first baseman. I still want him as a corner infielder, which means I want to get him later. But where at one point, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, you can get him for a song and a dance late, that's not true anymore. You know, we all know how well he saw swinging the bat there. So he's going to go earlier in your draft. Now, by earlier, I mean maybe late teens. He's come up about 4 or 5 rounds. That might continue to creep up. Playing in New York, he'll probably go even earlier because there'll be too many Yankee fans who think he's going to hit 58 home runs. So that'll be a problem there. But the Yankees' future is interesting with these guys. You know, Judge, Bird, Torres, when he's talking, he could get called up at some point during the season. It's going to be very interesting to see what the Yankees can do.
Can I give you a late corner guy that I think will have a pretty good season and maybe even steal some bases as well? But I think the power will be able to play in Miller Park.
Don't tell us.
And that's Travis Shore. I mean, he was acquired for Tyler Thornburg. So I think he's a guy that I would be keeping my eye on. He's a late round flyer to take. And I'm a little excited about him, to be honest with you.
All right. So that's a good name. There are a few other names were written about, but I would say that just quickly on Greg Bird, currently NFBC ADP, Greg Bird is the 19th first baseman, 246 overall. So, George, I think you kind of hit it right on the head, you know, in a 12-team league. He's starting to creep up. He's probably going late teens as this spring training has unfolded. He's risen through drafts to some extent. So he's going right behind, on average, C.J. Cron, right in front of Chris Carter and the guy we just mentioned, Justin Bour. So
Carter, you might want to stay away from. Carter,
yeah,
I don't know where Carter's playing.
I mean, either.
Well, I think the Yankees are going to have some injuries.
It's such a team-friendly deal. Why wouldn't they sign him?
Oh, yeah, the Yankees did the right thing there. But, man, I think there was some – and originally I thought this as well, that Carter would be the right-handed platoon with Bird. I don't think that's going to be the case now. Not at first, anyway. I think they'll give Bird a chance to fail, to prove he can't hit left-handers before they go to Carter there. I mean, Matt's right. Holiday will get hurt eventually, right? We all know that's happening. And when he does, there'll be your playing time for Chris Carter.
Yeah, sorry we cut you off, Matt.
No problem.
You know, so, and if you go ahead, add what you were going to say.
You go, Mike.
Okay. All right. Next guy on the list that we were talking about, Cesar Hernandez, currently ADP 334. Keep in mind, we understand how late these picks would be, and in some of your leagues, they won't even make it onto the draft board. But if you're in a deeper league, Cesar Hernandez, he did a lot well last season, 155 games. He hit .294. So your thoughts, Matt, on Cesar Hernandez?
Everybody does seem to like this guy. He's a late-round flyer. I'm not a big fan of him. His major asset is his speed. I know he hit like .280 or something like that last year. But
.294.
His stolen base success was not very good, and that's his main asset. So he's a guy that I'm not that high on. I know other people like him, but I'm going to take a pass on Cesar Hernandez.
George?
I agree with Matt. Yes, he stole 17 bases, but the key thing there, he's thrown out 13 times. That's horrible. That's really bad. Soon they're going to tell you, don't run anymore. Please don't run anymore. You're killing us here. I am not drafting him for his average. You know, I want the stolen base. That's the only reason you're drafting him, is the stolen bases. So that's a problem there. No, I'm not big on Hernandez. I mean, you mentioned 334. If you need speed, we all need speed at times. You got to take what you can get here. But I'm not looking for him. He'd be the guy always there. I'm desperate for speed. Fine.
He did a really nice job getting on base last year, 371. His career average, though, 350. He's 27 years old this season, so we'll see if he can keep those stats going. Maybe get a little bit of late-round value. Unfortunately, the stolen bases will be somewhat unpredictable, because after a low success rate like that, as George just stated, he might be told to stop running so much. So there we go, folks. That's a first hour, second hour down. With 1 hour to go on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, it's Mike, Matt, and George on the Roto Experts. We're back after this, folks. Hour number three coming up.